Welcome to the first episode of Born or Made, a podcast where we discuss the psychological tendencies of serial killers and whether or not they had any control over what they were doing. I am your host, Lily Benoit, and I am joined with Louisa.
Hello.
And our first episode today is going to focus on Edmund Kemper. He was born the 18th of December in 1948 in Burbank, California, to Clarnell and Edmund Sr. He had two sisters. One was 4 years older and one was 2 years younger. And something that's super important to understand about his childhood is that his parents had divorced in 57 when he was 9 years old.
And something else that is important to understand and has relevance to his later crimes is that his mother was an alcoholic and made Kemper live in the basement when he was 10 years old because she was scared that he would hurt or rape his sisters because he was a tall, large kid.
Yeah, and a lot of, I don't know how many of you listening out there are parents, but I'm sure that this thought would never even cross your mind that your child would do something like this to his own sisters. But his mother wasn't a very stable person, and she especially hated Ed because he looked just like his father. And in an interview with police, Ed talked about how he had a ritual of sorts when he was, like, going down to bed. He would turn on the lights at the bottom of the stairs, and then he would go and turn on the light by his bed in the corner next to the radiator. And then he would go back and turn off the light at the bottom of the stairs and then walk back through the dark towards the light by his bed. And he spoke about how he always felt like there was something following him and watching him. He was like trying so hard to walk like slowly and be controlled, but he was so scared the whole time. And one can only imagine what kind of mental toll that would take on someone, especially someone who's only 10 years old.
Right. And the mental toll of his mother treating him that way and making him live in the basement because she was scared of what he would do to her daughters is that he would play these really morbid games with his sisters, including popping the heads off their Barbies, cutting off the doll's hands, and another game called Gas Chamber, where he would have the sisters blindfold him, and then he would act like he was being gassed.
Yep, and in addition to these morbid types of games that he played with his sister, he, around the age of 10, he buried the family's cat alive. This was about 1 year after his parents divorced, so you can kind of see, like, the immediate toll that this took on him. It also makes you wonder if maybe there was something in there before that would leave him predisposition to that. But he didn't stop at just murdering that one family cat. At the age of 13, he killed another one of the family cats with a kitchen knife. And he said that he killed this one because it liked his sister more than it liked him. And now that there's been a lot more studies done on serial killers and psychopaths and in general, we can establish that the murdering and mutilating of animals is part of what they call a homicidal triad. The other two parts of that being arson and bedwetting past an appropriate age.
So after he killed another cat in his family, he was sent to, you know, he ran away to live with his dad, only to find out that his dad had remarried and started a new life after the divorce, and his dad didn't want Ed to be a part of that new life, so that probably really hurt and took another mental toll on him. And so he was sent to live with his paternal grandparents, his father's parents, in North Fork, California. But he didn't like living on the farm that they lived on, but he did he learned how to use weapons, and he used to kill small animals and birds with those weapons.
Yeah, so his grandparents definitely had, they definitely had more of a rural life than what he had with his mother, and he was very well-versed in guns and firearms, and he used them to kill birds, small animals, and his grandparents obviously didn't think that was very healthy for a young boy, so they often took away his firearms. And The first crime that he actually committed was when he was 15. He got into an argument with his grandmother in the kitchen, and when she turned around, he grabbed his gun and shot her in the back. And then he shot his grandfather when he came home. He claimed to the police that he didn't want his grandfather to have to find out that his wife had died. And he was just 15 years old when this happened. He had hid the bodies, and he called his mother. I'm not quite sure how she reacted to that. I don't know how anyone could really react to that. But she told him to call the police and tell him what happened. And on the phone with the police, he was so calm and collected, just matter of fact. The police almost didn't believe him, but they went out there anyways to check it out, and they found the bodies.
And so he was incarcerated and admitted into the Atascadero State Hospital, which is a max security hospital for the mentally ill. And there they discovered that he has really, really high IQ. He's almost like genius level. And he was also diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. But because he had a lot of charm and also some sociopathic tendencies, he was very well liked in the mental institution, and he was able to manipulate the doctors there, telling them what they wanted to hear. And by doing that, he was able to start giving psych evaluations to other patients.
And it's hard to listen to this stuff and like realize the fact that he's still a teenager. He was admitted when he was 15. He's a kid growing up in a mental institution. And at the time in California, their whole goal was rehabilitation. And because of the vast amounts of progress that he was making, they thought that their program was working, that they had done their job well. And they reduced his diagnosis to a personality disorder with passive aggression, which seems kind of crazy to me. Yeah. Because he did murder his grandparents.
So he was manipulating the doctors into thinking that he was doing better.
Yeah, being rehabilitated. At the age of 21, he was released, and he, against the doctor's advice, he was sent to live with his mother in California.
So he lived with his mother for a while, and while he was living with his mother, he applied to become a police officer. But he got turned down because of his size. He was 6'9 and 300 pounds. So he then worked for the State Highway Department. And in 1972, his record gets expunged.
And what's super interesting about that is he had already started killing people again when his record got expunged. He actually showed up to a psych eval with a head of a girl that he had murdered in the trunk of his car. And then a month later, he got his record expunged. So he ended up killing 6. People called him the co-ed killer because of the college-age girls that he killed. And he killed 6 of those starting in the year of 72, in the spring and summer of 72. And he killed 6 girls all the way through till about April of 73, which is when he turns his rage on the source, his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In April of 21, he gets an argument with his mother. His mother goes to bed, and Ed can't sleep. He's sitting up all night thinking about how much he hates his mother and how inadequate that she made him feel. So he gets up and he grabs a hammer, just a normal everyday hammer, and he bludgeons her to death. And he beheads her, and he has sex with her dead body.
Yeah, and he would always engage in sexual activities with the corpses after they were dead.
Yep. It was kind of his MO, the actual cause of death. It would vary between kills. He would strangle some, stab some, shoot them, smother them. But they always had post-mortem mutilation, always. And it was like he was conducting experiments with them, dissecting them for no real reason other than it seemed to please him. And he would frequently decapitate them. burying some of the heads in the yard of his mother's house, because she had always said to him that she wanted to be looked up to. This was kind of his way of...
his homage.
Yeah, it was. And the final murder that he committed was his mother's friend, Sarah Hallett. He called her over, said he had a surprise for her. And then he killed her, and he put her in his bed, and he slept next to her. And then the next day he woke up, and he ran away to Colorado. And the next couple of days he kept his eye on the news. When he didn't see anything about the murders, he called the police back in his hometown. She were actually friends with. He made good friends with the police officers, even though he didn't join the force. And because they knew him, they called him Big Ed. They trusted him. They thought he was harmless. They didn't believe what he was saying. He had to call back multiple times until, like, they finally took him seriously. And he told them, like, details about the crime that were very, very specific. So when they went over to the house and they saw that, they knew it was him. And they had police officers up there. They arrest him, and yeah. Okay, after Ed was in prison, he did confess to all of the crimes, and he was so calm and cool and collected about all this. We'll insert a clip of him talking with the police here about one of the murders, so we'll just let you take a listen to that.
One victim let me back in the car. I locked myself out. She opened the door for me. My gun was under the seat. What in the hell am I doing telling you that? Am I a masochist? Am I looking to be tormented further? I'm trying to show you just how awful this got, how commanding these rages got. I was raging inside. There was just incredible energies.
And this clip, like, blows my mind, because, I mean, he's so candid with the officers.
Yeah, he even says, I shouldn't be telling you this, like, acting like he could still incriminate himself further.
Yeah, and it's almost like he's talking about something so simple, like, oh, I took the last cookie, oh, I shouldn't be telling you that.
Yeah.
But it's outstanding, like, the level of ease that he has with these crimes.
And after watching the interview, I could see why the police wouldn't originally think that he was capable of committing the crimes, because he's just so calm and acting like it's a normal conversation with the interviewer.
Yeah, and in John Douglas's book, Mindhunters, John Douglas was part of the FBI. He established the behavioral science unit. He talks about how he liked Ed Kemper because he was nice and he was friendly. And I mean, obviously he didn't want him out of prison around in the streets, but I think it's so important that he turned himself in. He didn't want to be out there because he knew that he was a danger to society. It's almost like he felt remorse about what he did.
I would say I did, but I feel like if he didn't also, he also just knew it was the right thing to do, maybe, because I don't know if no remorse really came off in the interview, or the clip of the interview that I watched. He didn't really seem remorseful, more like he had to say it, maybe to not clear his own name, but come clean.
Yeah, and that's also something to consider. Is he playing everyone right now in jail, trying to manipulate them into thinking that maybe he isn't so dangerous? That's absolutely a possibility. Another important thing to discuss is the effect that his mother had on him and his treatment in his early life. I mean, try to remember back when you were 10 and, like, how young you were still and how impressionable you were to all of these things. And his mother is just telling him over and over again, you are not adequate. You are not a man. No one is going to ever want you. And this he mentioned that he was... It was this feeling of inadequacy that led him to kill all of these girls, is because he felt like he couldn't have a relationship with them any other way. He thought they would reject him. And so for him, this was the only way that he could connect with them in a way that he wanted to.
Mm-hmm. But I also feel like this ties into his, like, sociopathic tendencies, because we all have feelings of inadequacy, but we don't go out killing people. But his mother definitely had a really deep impact on his just killing women, mainly, besides his grandfather, and the mutilation he would commit upon them, because he just felt so inadequate, and he was trying to fix that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this one's hard because it's not cut and dry. It's not, he had a boatload of mental issues and he really couldn't help what he was doing, but it's not, there's clearly something in him that isn't quite sitting right, that has left him with a predisposition to do this. So I think it's hard to say whether it's one or the other, but I really do think that in this case, it's a combination of pre-mental disposition and the way that his mother treated him.
And could you say that the cat killing the animals, that's a sign of predisposition to...
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I can almost understand, not understand, but I can see why he would play those games with his sisters. Like, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. But killing the animals shows that he had, like, a predisposition.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's not projecting his feelings of inadequacy on the cat. He's experimenting with the cat and finding out, like, maybe it makes him feel good. Maybe he enjoys doing that, and that's what he's figuring out with those cats.
Mm-hmm. But his grandmother's murder was confusing for us. And we were speculating on why he did it, because as far as we know, his grandmother didn't really abuse him emotionally or physically. Maybe because she was related to the man, his father, that kind of like rejected him. And maybe because he didn't like living on the farm.
Yeah.
But there's no like real rhyme or reason.
I mean, his grandparents certainly weren't nice to him. They weren't welcoming and friendly, and they didn't make him feel at home, but they weren't outwardly abusive like his mother was. And his grandparents' murders are different in several ways. One, there was no postmortem mutilation of their bodies, and he didn't engage in any sexual activities with the corpses postmortem. So it's almost like this was like a spur of the moment. Like when teenagers, like, they get mad and they get upset, and maybe this was him just snapping, but on a completely different level.
Yeah, and it's almost like he didn't really feel, that wasn't one of the, like, he wasn't killing them because he felt inadequate, like the feelings of inadequacy. Like you said, it was just anger.
Just anger. And it is hard for us to sit here and speculate, because I mean, neither of us have a background in psychology. So it is hard for us to really understand, even like through all this research. So it really is only speculation from us, but
yeah,
it's so, so interesting to
try to understand the reasons behind it.
Because I don't believe that. I am trying to believe that none of these crimes are cut and dry, that you don't get people who are just, they are born and they're evil. And that's just that. I don't want to believe that that is the case. So this project, this podcast, is me exploring that and trying to understand whether it is a combination of predisposition and external circumstances that make people this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's what is compelling me to create this podcast, this limited series podcast.
Right. I mean, it is really interesting, because but it's also disturbing, because we will never know what's going on inside these people's heads. The interviewers, the doctors, you're not going to know what they're thinking. They might be lying to you or whatever, but it's very interesting to try to analyze what we do know in order to better understand these people. And as we go forward in this series, I think our previous knowledge of Edmund and future serial killers that we'll analyze will help us to better understand whether these people were born or made the way they are.
Yeah. So thank you so much for tuning into this episode. We'll hopefully release another one soon. And we'll see you all then.
Signing off.